welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have Steve Montgomery, the author of The Converging Apostasy and A Quick Outline on Hands-On Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency. And together, we're examining the themes of apostasy in the New Apostolic Reformation and its history. Steve, it's been a while since we have spoken. Things have been, for me, it's just a whirlwind. I know to the listeners in the audience, it's, you know, these are scheduled out, so it doesn't look like it, but we have had such a flurry of people from the NAR who are escaping and contacting me, and I'm doing, as you know, on Fridays, doing these interviews for the Hour Stories, and gosh, I think I'm stacked out with podcast releases for the next several weeks, and so it's gonna look like it's close together, but it's been a while since we've spoken, and a lot of the people who are escaping the NAR, they're referencing directly in my communications with them things that you and I have mentioned on this podcast. So I'm assuming that this is making a much bigger impact than even it seems from the surface. But anyway, yeah. It's good to be back. Good to be with you again. And we're kicking off. I was reading through the notes that you have on this podcast, and there's just so many interesting things to to talk about. I didn't even know. I'll have to come up with a label of a title for this, because there are just so many interesting things that are combined into one episode. I think the correct term will be a jam-packed episode.
Yeah, John. Yeah. One kind of way to look at this for me is that I think of it as kind of the continuing saga of Jane Lead. And Jane Lead, of course, her predecessors were pretty much the movers and the shakers of the esoteric world. And what came through Jane Lead in the 1700s was her eschatology, which clearly set out to set precedents for perfection of the church before Christ would be allowed to return. That should sound familiar for NAR people. And then taking dominion, which should sound similar to the seven mountains of the NAR. And then finally, the purge, which I think of as a sacred purge, that can be seen in modified version through the NAR, and pretty much not modified version, just purely stated through Bill Hammond, one of their central prophets. So I'm looking back to Jane Lead, then I'm getting a big focus on Bill Britton, because he was one of those who came through the Latter Rain movement, highly developed and highly respected in the so-called manifest sons of God doctrines, which again is perfection, dominion, and purge. And then he, in turn, was able to influence people like John Jimenez, Earl Polk, in the so-called kingdom message of the 80s. And after that, of course, you get the NAR. So That's kind of my perspective on where this can be taken. And I did make a note from the last podcast we did that you were talking about the political slash even Nazi connections with some of the or neo-Nazi kind of connections, KKK, also with some of the Latter Rain leaders. And I can say that this makes sense, because Latter Rain leaders and prophets such as Bill Britton were very apt to use terms like this. This is a direct quote from Bill Britton. He says that the new order and the new age for the kingdom of God is what will be ushered in. And for example, he says this statement, the new age is upon us, and the new age is the fullness of God in operation with his sons. So this talk of establishing a new world order, although that sounds very conspiratorial kind of theory, it's really purely stated in Bill Britton, George Houghton, J. Preston Eby, all of the ones that were highly influenced by Jane Lead. And just to kick off in that same general direction of Nazi slash political kind of connotations that come in with the NAR, I can say that even through Bill Britton, who a lot of people said, oh, no, he's a prophet of God. He never got into these sort of wild beliefs. Well, there was some precedent set for anti-Semitism. So one of the ways I determined this was by calling Bill Britton's daughter, Becky. And she said that she knew that her dad had inspired David Ebal, and they had sort of a friendly relationship as prophets. And David Ebal, as you know, John, was a promoter of Christian identity, racist theories, and he also had one foot in the world of the manifest sons of God teachings. So another one of those examples of ongoing revelations that sent people to just gather up all these kind of wild ideas and mix it in one pot. Then Britton said this, which I thought was kind of unusual, but also fitting. He said that the blood of Jesus that was shed on the cross came from God the Father. And this was the reason that his life was eternal. It's interesting. It's getting in that kind of racial purity and blood purity. He also said that the Jews are the rejected people. And he said that spiritual Israel is the so-called corporate body of Christ, as you hear quite often, manifest sons of God, latter rain, and NAR folk.
Yeah, I'll have to admit, whenever I saw that you were getting into the New World Order focus in this podcast, I get really excited because I'm working on my manuscript for my next book, and I'm diving deep into where that came from. Once I, like you mentioned, once I discovered that this was closely related to the Nazi movement that hit the United States in the early, 1930s, I think it was. I suddenly, I realized where all of this came from. And I started going back through all of the Latter Rain quotes that just were a little bit off. You know, they weren't outright Nazi propaganda, by no means, but they're just a little bit off. They would say things like, William Branham, he was the leader of the revivals, right? He said that the gospel was not even to the Jews, and he ridiculed ministers for trying to preach to Jewish people, which is wrong, right? It's anti-Semitic to think this way. The Apostle Paul even said the gospel is first to the Jews, right? When you mix British Israelism in this, you get the idea that the Jews that we see in the world today, according to this weird theology of British Israelism, they're not the real Jews. We're the supernatural spiritual Jews or whatever, however they present it. And it's in its simplicity, it's just pure anti-Semitism, and it came from an ideology that, you know, it's what fueled Hitler, and we saw the fruits of that. So I got really excited. That's where my book is headed. And looking through the notes you have in here, there are some interesting figures in the path to what we see today as the NAR, and they're just subtle hints at bad theology that really came from that earlier Latter Rain roots, right? And as they built upon it, and as these theologies just morphed and shifted over time, they really look nothing like they were in Latter Rain, but you can see clearly the progression of how they shifted, and where they ended up today is just mind-boggling. It in no way, shape, or form resembles Christianity.
Yeah, John, totally agreed with that statement. And to follow up on that, as things come, they're sifted through so many steps along the way, Jane Lead and then the Nazi thing. One thing that was pretty prevalent in pre-Nazi Germany were the teachings of several different societies, such as the Theosophical Society of Helena Blavatsky. And she was very purely anti-Semitic. If you read her Secret Doctrines, she had several different volumes of that, which I happened to read through, and that kept me up late at night sometimes. She credits her her anti-Semitic thought to people like Valentinus, the Gnostic that I've referred to several times. But focusing again on Britain and how he in turn influenced the NAR, I can say this. He had some teachings on angels. All these guys have extreme ideas about angels. And so like Bill Hammond and others in the NAR, Bill Britton said, quote, "The sons of God are destined to govern angels." Really? I didn't know that was part of our mission as Christians. And he says, "These ministering spirits are mighty servants who will obey completely the voice of that people who rise up in divine dominion to the throne of God." So again, he's a Jane Lead influence, latter rain prophet. So that's taking you back a few years. But comments like these are very clearly heard through people like Bill Hammond and other people in the NAR. So here's another angle on the angel thing. Jane Lead said, "Christ above and Christ beneath will join together." And this goes to Kabbalah, which deeply influenced her as one of the central ideas or streams of thought that's run through esoteric teachings. This is also conveyed through teachings about Jacob's ladder. This is really, really high octane kind of stuff in esoteric thought. So how did Bill Britton relate to this? Britton said that Jacob's ladder was a bridge of transport from earth to heaven and heaven to earth. And he's not talking about a sensation, a feeling, a raised attitude of your faith. He's talking about literal transport of souls on earth to heaven and or divinity, actually. And then those spirits of perfect men made just in the great cloud of witnesses, them having transport to earth. So this is similar to Rick Joyner and his sort of comments. So Britton said that the ladder will be the means of heaven and earth being joined as one. That sounds like almost directly that Joyner got that from Bill Britton. And that would be no surprise because Joyner is, according to Bill Mackenstadt, who studied all this stuff and read everything he could get his hands on. According to Bill, Joyner was another one who plagiarized Jane Lead's teachings and was highly influenced. Now, this next thing, I have a couple of things here that I've marked as say slowly, because this is going to be a mouthful. But if you're comparing laddering manifest sons of God prophets to the esoteric realm of teachings, you get this kind of connection. So I'll go ahead and read what I've got here. "This ascent of humanity up to divinity and the descent of angelic beings down to humanity is depicted in the logo of the occultist Helena Blavatsky's Theosophical Society by two intersecting triangles." If I'm not mistaken, you could tell me otherwise, John, but I think that's what you'd call the Star of David, that sort of form of a triangle. So the point of one of the triangles going down is the angelic realm being infused with humanity and the sons of God and so on. And the point going up is that ascent back into the heavenlies for the corporate body of Christ on earth. Here's another thing that I've written down. I said, say it slowly. The Christian identity preacher Wesley A. Swift and the Jane Lead influence Latter Rain prophet Roel Cronquist made mysterious comments about unidentified powerful others unknown to Christians at this time. These others, one, cannot be resisted. They're powerful. Two, they will come to prepare the way of the Christ. And three, they are described in terms that sounds very much like the spiritual hierarchy of the New Age teachings, principally through Alice Bailey. Likewise, Britain makes vague references to powerful guests other than, you know, Christians that we know that might come back to fulfill a ministry. And he says these guests will be present at the wedding feast. Wedding feast, another big loaded term that comes all the way back to the bridal feast, the bridal chamber, and all that kind of stuff in the esoteric world. And that comes to us today, primarily through, again, Valentinus. So likewise, the influential New Age author Alice Bailey said that the enlightened people who rule will not tolerate anyone who holds beliefs contrary to the energies of the plan.
You know, I'm a big fan of the Marvel movies, but even more than that, I'm just fascinated with the ancient mythologies. I love studying the ancient Greek and Norse and Roman, Egyptian, and it reminds you of the Rainbow Bridge, right? The I probably pronounce this incorrectly, but I think it's Bill Rost is how they say it. But in the Thor movies, it's the big Rainbow Bridge where they're crossing over. They have tried to take ancient mythologies and mix it with pseudo-Christianity, because it's all of the fantasy makes it appealing to the itching ears. That's really all of it, all this is. And they love talking about angels and demons, because if they can get your mind focused on a fantasy world that you can't see, you can't feel, it shuts off critical thought. In fact, a few of the people, not just one, but multiple of the people I've talked to who've left the NAR was very much like we were leaving the Latter-rain and its splinter groups. You lived in a world filled with angels and demons. If you stumped your toe, well, there must have been a demon there. And if it healed quickly, it must have been an angel. I mean, I'm exaggerating, right? But it was almost to that level. And they've put you in this weird mindset. And you can trace this back through time. If you want to go all the way back to the Gnostics, you can find people doing this as a scheme to convince people into something that resembles Christianity and is not. But in Latter-rain, you know, you had numerous people, not just William Branham, but numerous people claiming angels, and they were spoken to in these fascinating spiritual experiences. And then you examine their lives and you realize, well, that probably wasn't the right kind of spiritual experience, you know?
Right.
And the thing that stands out the most, one of the people contacting me, they mentioned something that even I did not know. You know, William Branham had this angel. He claimed he had this angel, I should say. And he would pray to it. It was on the stage with him, and he would say things like, "Angel of God, I do not see you," and then start praying to the thing, which is clearly against Christianity. And so he introduced this notion that it's okay if we pretend that we have angels, and then everybody started doing it. Well, whenever the Kansas City Prophets formed, apparently, they all claimed that they were visited by this angel named Emma. And the guy told me, I'm scratching my head, well, how come I've never heard of this, right? William Branham's alleged angel was male, clearly male. He gives very, very different descriptions. Like, if you were to be visited by an angel, it would be the most frightening and most, the thing that's burnt into your memory the most, if you were to be visited by an angel. Well, he never could remember exactly what this thing looked like. Sometimes he's clean shaven, sometimes he's got hair, sometimes he's got a turban. I mean, it's really weird. Well, apparently these guys from the Kansas City Prophets, they invented a female version of the angel named Emma, who came down and was, you know, was giving apparently the prophetic insight to form this group, which we see also did not really resemble Christianity that much. And so the guy told me this, and I thought, no, that can't be. And he said, no, this is secret knowledge. He said, Paul Kane, who I think you and I have mentioned it, I know Charles and I have, he was William Branham's protege, You know, mm-hmm. Paul Cain, he's the one who inspired all of the Kansas City prophets. Now they're saying, you can find articles on this, Paul Cain was deeply, deeply influential in creating all of this stuff. Well, apparently Paul Cain mentioned the angel Emma. And so I got online, I did some research, and if you go to the BereanCall.org, you can find a whole article about this angel named Emma. And they are, before it starts into the article, it mentions exactly the thought that come into my head when I'm talking to the guy. If an angel from heaven or any other preach any other gospel than I preach to you, let him be accursed. And that's how the article starts. And you go back and you think of all of these men and these angels and these rainbow bridges and other dimensions. And they talk about your spiritual body over in the, you know, in the celestial beings. All of this, it's great work for a fantasy movie, and I would love to watch a fantasy movie that they produce. I would actually watch it, but it has no place in a sermon.
Yeah, John, that's amazing stuff. First thing that came to my mind is, you might have seen this too, because I know you like sci-fi, The Adjustment Bureau. Did you ever see that? That is so clearly based on, and there's a book with that title prior to the movie. I forgot the two stars, but it was well done. It was a good Hollywood presentation, but it very directly relates to the angelic beings, the esoteric world, which would be the so-called spiritual hierarchy. And there you go again with Alice Beatty. But a couple of more people that you can get the NAR folks involved in this. Obviously, Bill Hammond, which I think in a previous thing we did, I quoted him as saying that that each of us has a personal angel and that you can call them down. Well, that's straight up from the Plan book of esoteric thought. Cindy Jacobs also says this in one of her books. She says, she has a personal angel that's been assigned to her. This comes straight from Valentinus, this sort of thought. Gwyn Shaw of End Time Handmaidens was another NAR prophet, and she wasn't one of those ones where, you know, like Branham later, people said, oh yeah, he was great, but he got a little bit off track, and you know, he's still a great prophet. Not like that. Gwyn Shaw clearly plagiarized some teachings from a New Age author. I don't have my notes in front of me here who it was, but that's been very clearly documented. So she plagiarized these teachings, and Cindy Jacobs continuously referred to Gwyn Shaw as a great prophetess and very mightily used by God in spiritual warfare sort of ideas, which the NAR picked up on. And of course, Cindy Jacobs and Gwyn Shaw continuously showed up in all of those apostolic conferences where the prophets got together and dreamed up new stuff for all the poor Christians that are being manipulated. So this all fits under a topic I have in front of me. It says, say what? Okay, so here we go with Bill Britton, who's influenced all these people. So the first topic is, Britton said, most people know that there's a life force that gives off rays of energy. Those who have a heavy radiation of this life force are able to demand your attention. John, I know that you've talked with Dr. Stephen Hassan, and he probably have a lot to say about this demand your attention, because any kind of cult leader knows how to do that.
Yeah.
From Jim Jones to whoever else. A second point, this is coming straight from Bill Britton. He says, enough exposure to the glory of God, meaning the Shekinah, will impregnate your very body. You can get that from Jane Lead. You can get that from a host of other people in this same line or stream of teachings. Three, this is Bill Britton. He says, during the Jupiter effect in 1982, the planets lined up, putting stress on the world with the possibility of shifting the Earth on its axis. I can't remember where I heard that, but I know 1982 was a big year for New Age people who were waiting for supposedly the reappearance of the Christ in that year. And so, yeah, there was a lot of hubbub about astrological issues and this planet lining up with that. If you ever saw the cartoon version of Hercules, you would see something about the lining up of the planets. And yeah, that goes back to mythology and so on. Yeah. Number four, Britton says this, his, meaning Jesus, his blood had to be poured out upon Earth because only through union with Mother Earth could he bring forth sons and produce a divine company in his image. Yeah, what? I mean, that is so, so off. Now, there's something that is sort of setting precedence for things to come, you could say. And Bill Britton didn't clearly state what it sounds like he's headed for, but you'll hear the same thing from Bill Britton, from Ray Prenzing, and from David Ebal, each in their own separate ways of expressing this. So what am I talking about? Here goes. The sexually promiscuous medieval brethren of the free spirit said, all things are lawful. Okay. And because they were sexually promiscuous, we see what they mean by that. The Satanist, Aleister Crowley, said in his Book of the Law, do what thou wilt, for that is the only law to follow. Now, check out what Britton, Prenzing, and Ebal all said. And all of those guys were Lateran influence, which means Jane Lead influence, Sons of God teachers. Britton said, for those who are brought into absolute subjection to his will, there is no law. They are led only by his spirit. Now, John, I think because of the things you're interested in, you might have heard of Thomas Munster. He was a contemporary of Martin Luther, but he said things like this. Also, Joachim of Fiore said similar things about the epic of the Father, the epic of the Son. And finally, something that sounds very Lateranish, he talked about the upcoming epic of the Spirit.
You know, as you're talking, I was trying to picture what it would be like for one of our listeners who has never been in any of this weird thing and is trying to understand, okay, what is the NAR? And they hear some of these. Ooh. What are these things? What are these comments, right? And funny part is, while they're thinking that, I'm actually being triggered as you're speaking, because I grew up, every single bullet point that you mentioned in that entire segment, I grew up and I can recite sermons about this stuff.
Wow.
It's so weird, man. The light meters, this thing, that's, and I use the word meters because that's how I was, that was the overloaded language that we had for this for this thing that William Branham taught. I was one of these very curious minds when I was a child. My parents used to get upset with me because when they'd give me a radio, the very first thing I did was sneak it in my room. I'd take the thing apart and see what made it tick. What's inside this thing? Always wanted to know. Had a curious mind. And I, fortunately, at my grandmother's house, they had an entire set of encyclopedias, so I could sit in these rooms and I could learn how everything works and the world around me. And the first time I heard William Branham describing these quote-unquote light meters, he's explaining that your whole body is made of light, cosmic light. You know, it's just like, it's Christian identity. That's all it is. But he's saying it's cosmic light. And he goes into this weird statement about science. And he tries to say that science confirms this absolute nonsense he's saying. And he says, science, your body is full of light. Whoever heard of such? It can't be. No light in your body, but they find that's wrong. They invented an X-ray, and the X-ray takes your own light meters. It don't take any other light. Your own light makes the X-ray. And the X-ray doesn't have any light of its own. Now, when I heard that as a kid, you know, I still thought this bozo was a prophet, and I thought everything he said was divinely inspired by God. But I did scratch my head because that's not how an X-ray machine works. And I'm literally this tall, and I know that what he said was complete nonsense, right? But right. I was so manipulated that I had to believe it. And so my mind is wrestling with what he said is just not right. It's clearly not right, but he said it, and he's the prophet. So I have to force myself to believe it. And like I said, every single bullet point that you went through, I can tell you where that came from in Latter Rain. And you can tell the audience where it goes way back into the spiritualism realm. And, you know, we're we're bringing in some names that people know are not associated with Christianity. My humble opinion, because after studying some of these guys that are in the NAR, they have no idea these names that you're mentioning in the past. They got it directly from Latter Rain, but the Latter Rain guys got it from the esoteric world, and they brought it as this new revelation, because if they could package something that they got from a witch, they could say, well, right. this witch has good Christian theology.
Yeah, John, and speaking of a witch that would influence somebody with Latter Rain basis for their teachings and manifest sons of God teaching, the first thing that pops into my mind there is John Robert Stevens, who had, by his account, and by the interview that Mr. Nichols did with him, Stevens had a so-called occult library where he had Emanuel Swedenborg, which would be a good tie-in for the spiritualism. He also had the works of Aleister Crowley. Interesting. He also credited a lot of his knowledge to George Warnock's Feast of Tabernacles and to a witch, he says, that he converted and was constantly filling them in on ideas that he determined, although they came from the occult world, were so-called neutral, because the spiritual realm is neutral. It's just that the devil has taken this stuff and stolen it from Christians, and we have to reclaim it and use it in a godly fashion. Okay, so yeah. And also, I have the Converging Apostasy, have quite a few different references to the pseudoscience that these guys try to use to baptize their wacky ideas. One would be Royal Cronquist, again, influenced by Jane Lead. Franklin Hall, who's one of the craziest guys ever, but he does have some references to stuff. You say, yeah, he got that from his pseudoscience. Oddly enough, even Jane Lead, who's writing primarily in the 17th century, she said that science would verify different stuff, teachings about the divinity that was coming up. You clearly see that with Helena Blavatsky's Theosophical Society in the late 1800s and just several other places. So yeah, they're constantly trying to find a way to justify this stuff and make it look like, it's not just somebody's random belief system. This is science, therefore you gotta go with it. So again, talking about Bill Britton and his connection to Jane Lead, which is, as you pointed out, also, and I agree, is a connection to the esoteric world. Britton said this, and this is on the topic of perfection in rulership, and I say just perfection in rulership a la Jane Lead. So Bill Britton said, there must be a people on earth just like Jesus. He is the pattern son, and his body is Christ. That sounds an awful lot like stuff I've heard from Kansas City prophets and other, you know, NAR-related people. Here's another spot where I have from my own self. It says, read slowly. Okay, so here goes. This is from Bill Britton. Quote, his divine life will again be reproduced. That's also like J. Preston Eby, another person deeply influenced by Jane Lead. So here's my explanation of this, and it's a big mouthful, but here goes. This sort of pluralistic fragmentation of deity is a prevalent view that connects the esoteric world under the influence of Alice Bailey with the Jane Lead-inspired so-called Christian branch of the converging apostasy as seen in the latter rain and after. It also allows the angelic components of an aggregate God to be controlled, manipulated, and channeled. So in other words, if you can take God Almighty, and this is, you know, blasphemous to say it, but if you can take him and break him into these little pieces, well, it's not quite so dominant and imposing upon you, and his will doesn't matter as much because you can just take those angelic components and channel them or speak to them and whatnot. And so this is why Jane Lead and Bill Brennan talk about heaven, which is coming down the earth, as with Rick Joyner, the NAR prophet. Heaven to them is really not a place or a state of being. It's more these broken up individual parts of what the esoteric world used to call the great chain of being. And that could come from Neoplatonism, several other places. But when you take God and attempt to break him up like this, again, he's not so imposing. You can do with him as you wish. And esoteric world and the Jane Lead influence manifest Sons of God latter rain world like it that way. Okay, so here's Bill Brennan sounding much like the Gnostic Valentinus's teachings on the so-called bridal chamber, meaning the location, metaphorically speaking, where this divine interaction occurs and where you become essentially like Jesus to the extent that you also are divine. So Brennan said that, quote, after the sons of God finish his work, they finish his work, quote, they will go into the bridal tent where there will be a union in him that we have never known before. Okay, this is interesting to me because even from some of the scholars I've read and their analysis of Jane Lead's teachings, they constantly refer back to one of the central idea or central writings attributed to Jane Lead, which is the 60 Propositions. And it doesn't really go into this kind of stuff, but I happen to have read, I kind of lost count, but quite a few of Jane Lead's original prophetic teachings and, you know, analyze what was going on and the different ideas. And so I can say this, for Brennan making this statement, Lead says in like fashion that when, now imagine this as being Christian, it's just no way, but Jane Lead said, when pure spirits or spirits of light, she calls them, descend into bodily vehicles of chosen vessels, there will be, quote, a union that we can just hint at. Then mortality will be swallowed up in immortality. Wow, that's like Brennan directly got that from her. He didn't really get it from the 60 Propositions because that's not quite so explicit. And then Bill Brennan, like the NAR prophet Rick Joyner said, like Bill Brennan and Rick Joyner, Lead said that the elite will bring heaven down to earth. So there's Lead, Jane Lead in the 17th century saying something that Brennan, Rick Joyner, others have picked up. Bill Hammond has his own take on this similar stuff. So similar to the NAR, Lead said, one, the power and dominion to reign on earth is in his saints. Two, they will overtop the kingdoms of earth. And three, all shall be forced to acknowledge that they are the anointed ones. Well, I can't wait to turn this up to you, John, because I want to hear what you have to say about this. Likewise, Brennan said, now connect these dots if you're listening and you're, I know when your listeners are listening, they can push pause and say, wait a minute, isn't that what Brennan said? Isn't that what Aleister Crowley said? So likewise, Brennan said, it's time now to take the kingdom, that means take dominion politically. We might have seen some of that happening nowadays with the NAR and certain factions of our political world. And two, all authority that once belonged only to the invisible God is now available to mankind. Now, Brennan was writing that somewhat after the initial lettering movement, say, like, I've forgotten, but that would have been probably late 50s, early 60s when he wrote that. And you will see, as you know, things like that turning up with Jim Jones and William Branham.
You know, you mentioned how much I like science fiction, which is absolutely true. I've got, on every episode, I've got, I don't know if you can see it, but the Millennium Falcon is behind me on the wall here. I love science fiction. I absolutely love it. And I love going into the realms of the unknown, like X-Files. I don't know if you remember the show X-Files from the 90s.
We
weren't allowed to have a TV during that portion of my life because we're in a cult that tried to suppress the outside world. But after I got married, we got one and I watched all the X-Files. Well, what they have in these types of religion are building blocks of not even bad theology, just pure fiction, building blocks of fiction. They talk in circles. You mentioned science, right? And the way this works, in fact, I just had this conversation, I want to say it was 3 days ago, with a person who escaped the NAR. What they do, they talk in circles, but they talk in circles in such a way that they'll give you point A, and to believe point B, you have to believe point A being fiction. And then point A might be, something that's in the science that's not even related to the religion. And then you've got point C, but to believe point A, you have to then believe point C. So you've gone on a complete circle. And a pure, plain, and simple example of this, and again, had this conversation just 2-3 days ago. They love to use science. They will tell you that science completely confirms whatever is their weird, fantastical revelation. Science confirms it. And go look at the science. And so people, they get their brain wrapped around that and they think, okay, science is confirmed. This must be our prophet. And then they'll bring in another element and they'll say, now science doesn't believe this, but we, as the elite royal seed of Abraham, we know that this is true, regardless of what the science says. So then the people are thinking, oh, I'm the royal seed of Abraham, so I can't trust the science. And then it goes in the circle, right? Well, you have to believe the first point because of science. You can't believe the second point because of science, and welcome to the loop. You can argue endlessly with these people. And that's what they've done. They have taken it's elements of fantasy, but if you really think about where it came from, this is purely evil, what they've done. They've taken things from the esoteric world, the satanic world, the Gnostic world, all of these different things that are anti-Christian, not just pseudo-Christian or extra-biblical. Many of them are anti-Christian. And they'll say, you must believe this element that is anti-Christian, and we have to believe it because we're the royal seed of Abraham, and science will try to tell you that this anti-Christian thing is false, but we know better because we're the royal seed of Abraham. And then welcome to the loop. Your mind gets in this weird thing. You mentioned Dr. Stephen Hassan. This is one of the points that he actually explains really, really well in his book, Combating Cult Mind Control. If they can take a subject matter that your mind is wrestling with itself, part of it is completely false and you know it is false, but you have to believe it is true, while another part is true and contradicting the first part, well, your mind plays tug of war with it. And if they can get you to suppress critical thought and focus in on the conflict, they will talk in circles purposefully, because once they do this, they can hijack your mind, and it's part of the whole brainwashing scheme. I don't know if you watched it or not, but there's this video out there of, I think it's it's Mike Bickle. Mike Bickle is talking about how the end of days is going to play out and what is the mark of the beast. And this lady asks him a question and he answers it. And then she thinks about it. And realizes, wait a minute, that answer doesn't make sense. So she asks it a different way, and he says the opposite thing. And then she, wait a minute, that's not what you said the first. And then it goes into this weird circle, right? And he's smiling, but you can tell in his eyes, you can see he's angry. Shut up, woman. I don't want to hear from you.
Yeah.
And that's how this works. If you can hide, you can hijack their mind by making the mind play these mental gymnastics. And that is exactly what they're doing when they bring in all of this anti-biblical nonsense.
The word that I've heard a lot of people use for that, and I'm sure you understand this, is cognitive dissonance. And it seems like once I left the group that I was in, and being a musician, I called it cognitive dissonance. You know, like everything they're saying to you is analogous to very creepy sounding music that seems out of tune with anything that you normally think of as good music. So, yeah, and you know, the group I was in was really devoted to the teachings of the word teachings and the positive confession teachings, like Kenneth Copeland. And so when I was in my group, part of the way we tackled this issue of the mind is that we said, you know, the mind is the devil's playground. So you have to shut off the mind and get in the spirit. Okay, that sounds kind of vague. How do you get in the spirit? Well, one, you basically chant, and this is probably a little bit controversial with some of your listeners, but I'm quite convinced that what we did was a learned process that was called speaking in tongues. And so if you do a repetitious speaking of syllables that, you know, to the rational mind have no meaning, essentially you're chanting and kind of zoning out, which is what most of us would do. And so if you do this prior to the preaching for, say, like 30 minutes and sing songs that are related to this and, quote, sing in the spirit with unidentifiable syllables like I'm describing, then you're just like a sitting duck, mentally speaking and critically thinking speaking to whatever they want to toss your way. And then, like you said, it's a circle. When you said that, oddly enough, I was thinking of Meet the Parents and the Circle of Trust. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes.
So you're either in or out of that circle. I'm not really sure which one. I would prefer not to be in that circle if that's the way it works. So the last category I have here, and again, this is relating Britain, Bill Britton. He's a Lattering prophet, clearly influenced by Jane Lead. If you want to see the documentation of that, it's all very thoroughly handled in my book, The Converging Apostasy. So Bill Britton says something that is very similar to the NAR prophet Mike Bickle previously mentioned. So Britton said, great destruction is coming upon the world, in which from 50 to 100 million civilians will die within minutes after it begins. For the wicked shall be judged and taken away, while the righteous shall inherit the earth. So in the earlier days of manifest sons of God teachings, they say taken. Well, what does that mean? You know, one shall be taken, the other left, clearly from scripture. But for them, taken means to be done away with, physically killed. And once you see that the agency of that killing is through, in and through, as they say, the corporate body of Christ, the elite members of the church, then you see 1 + 1 = 2. These people are going to die. Who's going to be the one who delivers the hand of death? Well, that's the sons of God, because they've been given this great responsibility to clean the earth and cleanse the world. So, like I said, who does this? Britton says, the manifestation of the sons of God will destroy his enemies. So destroy, a little bit vague. No, not really, when you read that in context of his other teachings. It's just a little way to skip, hop, and jump away from clearly stating, we're going to get a gun and shoot you. Some of them, well, you know, like Wesley Swift would make that a little bit more clear. And also, maybe a lot of people are not aware, but John Robert Stevens and some of his elders in The Walk, which was clearly influenced by William Branham and The Feast of Tabernacles by George Warner. He said, and I got this from a guy who interviewed him, Mr. Nichols, again, Woodrow Nichols, who's written about The Walk very well. Mr. Nichols told me that some of the elders of the Walk, and that means John Robert Stevens, truly was aware of this. Some of those elders said, quote, we're going to finish the job that Hitler didn't, and that's why we're stockpiling some guns to get prepared for this. If you fast forward to nowadays, where people like, say, Rick Joyner and Cindy Jacobs, NAR prophets, were, and Bill Hammond, when they talk about the upcoming Civil War, when some unmentionable person says it will be a bloodbath if he's not elected, well, it's kind of reshaped, remolded, but that same concept of a sacred purge, of a cleansing of the earth, is present, just in a slightly repackaged, somewhat euphemized way of saying it. So here's what I have to say about Britain in that regard. Similar to the NAR prophets, already said that, and then like NAR prophets in general, Britain said that every enemy shall be put under the feet of the body of Christ. That can mean a lot of things, but again, if you take it into the context of their teachings, it doesn't mean, oh, we'll put you in your place and you'll pay attention that we are godly people speaking the truth. No, it's a little bit more explicit than that, a lot more explicit, actually. So what Bill Britton says, the sons of God are his great army, which goes forth conquering until the church is purified and perfected and the whole earth is cleansed. If you go over to Royal Cronquist, another Jane Lead influenced prophet, you also see this kind of concept that the earth will be purified, and that means that lots of people will die. Okay, here's like the prophet Bill Hammond. Bill Britton said that when the elect have died out to self, what a common phrase, they will be able to properly and righteously be used by God in the judgment of this present age. Therefore, the wrath of God is the love of God. So I guess you read 1984, and we might hear similar kind of comments. Okay, and so just to wrap up my notes here, this is, again, in the Conversion Apostasy, my book, you'll see a little bit more, if you have doubts that, no, he probably didn't really mean that. You'll see that, yes, he did, and you'll see the people that were influenced by Jane Lead constantly were saying similar things that she said. So Becky Britton, Bill Britton's daughter, said, now, and I really appreciate what she said here. It's wise. She said the idea of killing others would be horrible. Why did she say that? Because I gently and diplomatically pointed out that her dad believe this, and all those other prophets that he hung out with and had fellowship with also believe this. Then she said, you'd have to be like a, quote, dictator to do such things. People who propose such things are, quote, motivated by ego and just want to be in charge. Yeah, Becky Britton, speak. Preach, tell it like it is. So unfortunately for her, and, you know, I put her on my prayer list constantly because, I mean, she, just like you, John, being raised and brought up in the message, she was raised and brought up with her dad in the ministry of one of the, it's hard to find the adjective, but just one of the most wicked forms of teachings that's still infecting the world and the church through its children, doctrinal children, that you find in the NAR.
It is wicked, and she is absolutely right. I was thinking as you were talking, and it's no laughing matter. It's comical to me because of the frame of mind that you have to be in to come up with this stuff, right? I was thinking, I am a fan of science fiction. Don't get me wrong, but I'm a fan of the good guys in the science fiction.
Yeah.
And when you think about what they've done, what they're doing, and more to the point, what they're saying, these are the things that you would hear in a science fiction or fantasy book or movie, but you would hear it from the bad side, not the good side. And yeah. And in fact, I'll try to come up with some if I can, but I've come up with movies as you were talking, glimpses of them in my mind, of the villain and their evil face saying very much the same kind of things, right? They want this attention. They're narcissistic. That's how the villain is portrayed. But what the part that made me laugh is this: the good science fiction movies have a lot more depth to them, and they cause you to think. But these guys, once they hijack your mind, they don't need the same depth. And so it's almost like they're preaching from a fantasy world that instead they got from a comic book. And the reason why I was laughing is, if you go back to some of the early Latter Rain, like the very, very early side of things, what was being said often mimicked what you saw in a comic book. It was so low level that in today's world, people would hear things like one of the opening sermons, William Branham in 1947, he's got some kind of bracelet on a string, and he says, "Look, if your mind thinks hard enough, you can make this thing move." I have actually seen this in a comic book, man. this is stuff for comic books. It's not stuff for religion. But
you're getting sleepy.
It's so absurd. And then when you walk away from it, I'm an intelligent man, and to think that I was age 37, and I still believed that the person's mind could literally moved the string. And once I left, I'm like, you know, that's just a simple bar trick. I think I've seen kids do it in school whenever I was, you know, you just move your hand a little bit or your elbow and the thing moves. Well, he's using parlor tricks and worse. I mean, it's like a comic book religion, which is, to me, it's kind of funny, but if you think of the eternal consequences of this, it is not funny at all, because what these men are teaching you is not Christianity, and there's no greater evil. So yes, I feel sorry for her as well. I wasn't involved at the same level she was, but my grandfather was probably the closest thing to cult royalty that existed after William Branham's death. He led Branham's Tabernacle for 50 years. So I fully understand where she's coming from. It is horrific. But anyway, this is fascinating stuff. I could talk about this for the next 5 hours. So let's break it off and let's pick up next time with some more crazy, interesting, fascinating, comic bookish, religionish kind of stuff that people today have developed into the NAR. If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more information about the dark side of Latter Rain, read Weaponized Religion, From Latter Rain to Colonia Dignidad, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible. For more about the Converging Apostasy, you can read the book, The Converging Apostasy. You can also read the book, A Quick Outline of Hands-on Eschatology, A Matter of Timing and Agency.